This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, it's 5:32. I'm going to call this meeting to order. Thank you all for being here today. Today is May 3rd, 2021. This is our final GPSA general meeting of the semester, and there is a lot for us to cover today. I should say in advance that we do expect that, you know, we won't be able to cover everything by 7 p.m., so there is a good chance that we may have to make a motion to extend the meeting, but let's deal with that if and when we come to it. And before we begin with roll call, I need to announce officially the results of the open election, which was held electronically over this past 2 weeks or so under the graduate school division. So all other divisions, your voting members are staying the same. For today, the results for the humanities division is Stephanie Lopez. For life science, Mardik Chatterjee. For physical sciences, Jordan Dutzel, Chris O'Connor, and Alexandra Kliostova. And from social sciences, Meredith Welch and Henry Williams. So these are the new voting members which were inducted. And I would like to call one important point to everyone's attention, which is that it's come to my attention that our Resolution 6, which established the parameters of the voting member election, conflicts with our bylaws. So the resolution says that the new voting members are supposed to start their term today in this meeting. However, our bylaws say that all terms, including voting member terms, are supposed to begin at June 1st. So since this kind of came to my attention that our resolution didn't really override the bylaws, I would like to make a decision to go with my previously announced plan of inducting these new voting members in today's meeting. However, there are, for those of you who are older voting members who didn't get a chance to nominate yourself earlier, there are lots of vacancies, which you'll have the opportunity to fill during the division breakout. So first, given that, I would like to open up, is there anyone who would like to raise a point of order or question regarding the plan that I would like to set forward for today's meeting? If so, speak up or raise your hand. Okay, Seeing none, then we're going to go with the roll call, including these new members, which were just inducted for today. Are there any other points of order regarding the election outcome?
I just want to ask what the necessary number for quorum would be and then for passing resolutions, because we do have three resolutions on the floor today.
So by my count, I'll have Coral confirm this. By my count, there should be 28, so the quorum should be 15.
This is 28 with the new people?
With the new people, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So seeing none, then let's go by that plan. And now let's go ahead and take the roll call, please.
Isabella Harnick.
Here.
Mila Kantar. Jack Levin. Matthew Bulch. Stephanie Lopez.
Present.
Mardik Chatterjee. Chris O'Connor.
Here.
Jordan Dotzel. Alexandra Kluostova. Meredith Welch.
Here.
Henry Williams. Charlie Day.
He'll be joining Charlie. He's had a conflict for the first half hour.
Okay. Chris Inklin.
Here.
Natalie Gonzalez.
Here.
Chen Liu. Christine Oanela. Ryan Maloney. Amanda Cirillo. Alexandra Pressure.
Here.
Matthew Drescher. Nick Danev.
Present. I'd also like to note that Tim Ludermoser will be late, but will be here.
Okay. Akarsha Pandey. Kavya Krishnan.
Here.
Caroline Steingard.
Here.
And David Kent.
Here.
Count 11 voting members present.
Okay. So what we're going to do then is we're going to continue with the presentations first then, and then I'm going to take the roll call again after that. I know there's maybe some people who just came in afterwards, so let's go on to the presentations first, and then we'll take a roll call one more time before we do approval of the minutes, okay? So seeing no objections to that, I recognize Jason Kopka and Catherine Bohr for the presentation for today. Are you ready now?
Ready. Let me just share my screen. So I'm going to provide a highly abridged version of a discussion that Dean Bohr and I had with a committee of GPSA representatives to talk about funding and funding continuity and actions that the graduate school has taken and what our plans are for managing funding. I'm going to go through this very quickly, but I think we'll leave a few minutes for time for questions if it all works out. So in our discussions with, let me make sure I'm in slide share mode. In our discussions with the GPSA leadership, one of the things that we quickly realized is that there was a little bit of a disconnect between a number of the actions that the graduate school had done, and some of them were very directly working with graduate fields, and they just were not highly transparent to students. And so what I'd like to do is start by sharing a little bit of the communications and the actions that we've taken since the COVID disruptions really kind of rippled across campus in spring 2020. I've got a list of just some key moments where the graduate school leadership reached out to graduate fields and implemented a number of policies and conversations around funding continuity with the goal of making sure that funded students would not incur any hardships that we knew that there would be hardships, but our goal was to try to mitigate those. So beginning very early in this pandemic, we quickly received commitments that there would be no interruption in assistantships. This was, you know, now in hindsight, it seems obvious, but at the time there was real worry that students who couldn't work on research projects, that it wouldn't necessarily be possible to continue charging them to federal grants. Students were leaving the country, and there was a number of questions about whether they would still be able to receive funding. So there was a huge amount of coordination and effort behind the scenes to bridge funding, even in those first very acute moments of the disruption. We also sent out, we worked very closely with DGSs and pushed out information on how to document what students were dealing with so that we would have a full picture and would be able to make appropriate academic accommodations that included making changes and making notes in the student progress reviews, summer funding plans. We also very quickly began working with graduate fields on meeting whatever their sort of critical acute needs were and providing as much flexibility as we could. We had a number of DGSs reaching out saying that they were, you know, scrambling to try to line up opportunities for their students. In late spring of 2020, we announced that we had a summer funding program for students that needed emergency fellowships. This was a real concern because we expected that many summer PA opportunities, summer internships were canceled. And so we put in place these sort of stopgap emergency funds. We also, much as the GPSA did, we funded a number of, we diverted funds to the Access Fund to help sort of, you know, just relieve some of those immediate stresses that students were facing. We also quickly announced that the graduate schools plays a role in funding, but we're only one piece of the puzzle because the graduate school has purview over fellowship resources that are allocated centrally. But as you probably know, TA appointment lines, those come from the course offering colleges, and research assistantships, those are usually associated with faculty grants. So any individual student, their funding plan is oftentimes a mix of teaching assistantships, research assistantships, and fellowships. So it really required a lot of coordination to make sure that all the pieces were in place. So much of what I'm going to speak to is really addressed around the part that the graduate school has direct purview over. I know that another area that the graduate school has been very proactive in is trying to map out a very complex legal issue around students outside the U.S. who are on assistantships. And that was a really important pain point and a big effort in the sort of the spring and summer of 2020. As we moved into summer and fall, we advocated and were successful in having the university keep the stipend rate increased for this current year, even as faculty and staff salaries were frozen or in some cases even reduced. We expanded eligibility for the remote assistantship policy to include students not just stranded outside but are facing a hardship. And that was a really important nuance that allowed us to keep a lot more students on assistantships if they couldn't or were uncomfortable reentering the U.S. The graduate school was heavily involved in the discussions around giving TAs input and options and recourse and teaching modality choices. And then in the fall, this is when we began really having in-depth conversations with our directors of graduate studies and really pushing them to think about developing individualized funding plans for each field. Recognizing at that point that the disruptions were going to be for at least a full academic year, if not longer, and that many fields would really need to make some hard choices about whether it made sense to offer admissions to a new cohort in fall 21. And so we further expanded flexibility for the graduate school fellowships. And the way those work is that the graduate school gives each doctoral field a set number of fellowship lines that they can use for recruiting students. And what we said is, before you go ahead and offer anyone admission, you need to make sure that you have a solid plan for covering your current students. And if you don't, then those fellowships really should be repurposed for supporting current students and whatever disruptions they're experiencing before we bring in new students and kind of put them in the pipeline. So there was a lot of conversations around that, and I'm actually really proud of our fields that I've had so many really important sort of weighty discussions with DGS is trying to figure out how to move the puzzle pieces around in order to meet all their students' anticipated needs, and it's those have been sometimes hard to predict. So when we met with the GPSA leadership, one of the things we spent a lot of time talking about is what are the data tools that the graduate school uses to monitor and track funding conditions out in the field. And we actually have a very large suite of data dashboards, interactive data visualizations, and data tools that allow us to both internally look at trends and make analysis in a number of different ways, but also push those data out to the local decision makers at the field. So, you know, we've empowered DGSs and GFAs to go in and use those to look at what are the metrics, what are the data telling us around disruptions, time to degree completion, attrition, looking at any given field's overall funding picture so they can anticipate how things might change. And so we have this really robust set of data tools. On top of that, we also have survey data that we collect from student surveys. And the survey data are helpful because they provide benchmarking. They also provide BGSs and fields with tools to understand student perceptions. And many of those perceptions are related to funding. And so, you know, how are students funded is a metric, but how students feel about their funding, do they feel secure, are they anxious, are they given funding information in a timely way? And so we've really pushed our DGSs to think about what those surveys tell us about the funding climate in their field, and then that'll help shape our reaction and our response to that. Also, the doctoral experience survey was administered this spring, And we know that that's going to be very telling, because most of the respondents would be very clearly feeling the first wave of impacts from COVID. So we can compare spring semester responses with longitudinally against prior administrations of the survey. The graduate school meets with each DGS on a biennial basis, and we review the data. We actually send each of them a packet of their data and metrics and survey data, usually 50 to 70 pages of data. And Dean Bohr and I and others in the grad school leadership really push and challenge them. We ask tough questions about what the data is telling. We ask for context, and we those tend to be really robust and informative conversations. But again, I just wanted folks to understand the way that we're engaging with these data, because it is these data that is going to actually help us make informed decisions about impacts this year, but importantly for the next couple of years, because we actually think that some of the real decisions will actually fall in the next 2 or 3 years. In addition to that, the graduate school doesn't routinely review the actual student progress review narrative, because those are intended to be a conversation between students and committees and sometimes with their field. But we've encouraged that students document disruptions, COVID disruptions, in their student progress review, so that whether it's now or whether it's a year or two in the future, we can use, you know, those can help inform decisions around, for example, whether it makes sense to petition for additional time. And then the last point on this slide, and I'll just quickly touch on it, is that all of petitions, when a student needs an extension to a deadline, and this could be a deadline to form a committee or schedule an A exam or complete a defense, or maybe they need additional time to complete their degree, we also collect data on those petitions, and so we can see trends. Are they clustered in certain disciplines, in certain fields? Are there certain profiles of students, international or underrepresented students, that seem to be experiencing more delays? And so those can also inform the way we kind of respond to students who are experiencing those delays. And so those are all the tools that we're using to sort of monitor and assess what these impacts are. And again, given the nature of doctoral education, this is a multi-year endeavor. So we're a year and a half into COVID, a year and a quarter into COVID. So, you know, Dean Bohr and I, much of what we've been talking about is thinking about how these disruptions will play out for students who might have been in their second or third or fourth year during the onset of the pandemic. And those students will likely experience delays, maybe not this year, but in 2 or 3 or maybe even 4 years from now. So we are forward thinking in those ways. So just to kind of summarize, so we can leave a little time for Q&A. One of the things that gives us a lot of optimism around funding is that we are not seeing widespread evidence that there is a decrease in the total number of funding lines. So there's not fewer TA lines, there's not fewer fellowship lines. So the total number of funding slots has held pretty steady. We are not seeing that significant cuts in external funding or faculty grants either. So right now, knock on wood, the supply side of the equation for funding is relatively stable and strong. The obviously that's important to correlate with the demand, how many students need those spots. And this is an area where we are being very vigilant and proactive. So on this slide, just some quick snapshot data. There's been some students who said, look, this has been just so catastrophically disruptive. You know, we're really not graduating. We're not progressing. And I understand that is a reality for many, many students. And it's a challenge for all of us, I think. But our data from 2020 showed that almost 500 doctoral students did receive their degrees in May, August, and December. And those numbers compare reasonably well with actually 2019. So, you know, I think one observation is that students who are in the very final phases of their doctoral programs during the disruptions, you know, first disruptions, you know, they were writing, and so many of them were able to make progress. That actually could look very different than students who were in the midst of, you know, lab research or trying to do field research and maybe in their second or third or fourth year. So, but in terms of are students not completing, our data don't support that. Students are completing. Are students experiencing delays? Yes. Another summary point, though, is that fields are actively and thoughtfully working on individualized funding plans to make sure that they have the right number of funding packages, fellowships, assistantships, PA, GRA, in place for their current cohort, and factoring in students that are having delays. And those delays are not one size. Like those in some disciplines, they've actually been able to manage and keep making progress. In disciplines that rely on heavily on field work, it's been extremely disruptive. So each field is coming up with a sort of a tailored response. We did encourage, in fact, we really pressured many fields to think about whether it made sense to admitting a fall 21 cohort, given the uncertainties. And a number of fields chose not to, and a number, quite a bit larger number, reduced their cohort size in order to free up more funding lines. And then as the recent GPSA resolution on this topic requested, Dean Bohr and I are 100% committed to sharing data with the GPSA and really delving into this, because I think the data will tell a relatively positive story about the disruptions. I think it'll tell a very thoughtful story around how fields are managing this. And I think it's fair that we should be transparent about this so that students can see types of work that's happening, sometimes behind the scenes, but certainly we do need to watch for this. And we are, many of our fields now are having a multi-year admissions slowdown in order to make sure that they have enough funding lines reserved for current students who might need a bit more time. So I'll end just by saying one of the things that's not on the slide but is really important is this commitment. I know that Cornell is an institution and Dean Bohr and I take it seriously that we do have a funding commitment to students and we intend to honor that. But the flip side of that is that we've really been pushing faculty and students alike to think about how to be responsive to these delays and to these challenges and make sure that that you're still able to push forward with research, even if that requires kind of shifts or pivots. And that if any student finds themselves in a place where they've been stalled in their progress for more than a semester or two, that's a great opportunity at the time. It's important to reach out and seek supports because stalling for more than a semester or two starts to have some really significant impact on your own professional life. So let me pause there or stop if we've run out of time. And if we have time, then I know Dean Bohr and I are happy to answer questions.
Okay, thank you so much. So we do have a couple minutes for questions. If anyone has any questions, please raise your hand. Okay, so seeing none. Becca.
Of course, I'll ask a question sure. If there's a chance. So I'm just curious, I don't know about every department, but I certainly haven't heard from my department what funding looks like for myself or my classmates for next year. I'm one of those students who's in my fifth year, so there's still some uncertainty. I'm wondering if the graduate school is in a position where you're able to say that every fifth year who is in need of additional opportunities for funding will certainly have it.
Catherine, do you want to jump in?
I'll start. And then Jason, if there's anything else you'd like to add, that would be great. So Becca, what we are in a position to do is to communicate with all the fields to ensure that they've got a plan for their continuing students, but not for us to make a blanket statement about every student without having that granular knowledge of what's happening with that person. But we are in a position to communicate with the fields with regard to the expectation for the support for people to finish their programs. And Jason?
Yeah, I'll tell you, having looked at many, many, many funding plans that DGSs have shared with me, just trying to get feedback on them, one of the way that they most typically look at this is to say, all right, we normally, at this point, we would normally have six fifth-year students who are in need of funding, and we have four that might need it next year. So we can kind of move the pieces around, and we're pretty confident we'll have those TA lines, or maybe we'll have access TA lines. So I think it's less likely that a field would reach out to individual students and ask. I think what's probably happening is they're saying, given our cohort and how they break down across the different years, what do we expect? Which students in their fifth, sixth, seventh, and sometimes even eighth year, and that's not a very normal time for funding, but again, in fields where students are doing field research, if that got truncated, there sometimes are really exceptional needs at this point. So most of the funding plans actually look at total cohort numbers and cohort, by their year, and then trying to piece together, does the field have enough resources? And in addition to the normal resources, so in the humanities, that'll primarily be the SAGE dissertation year and teaching assistantships. But what the graduate school has done is we have freed up, we've said if there are unused fellowships, so if, for example, they didn't all the fellowships weren't used for recruiting, normally those are not just back to the fields to use for advanced students. We would put them back in a pool where they would be used for next year's recruiting. But in this year, we've given DGS this flexibility to, if they have sort of partial SAGEs from various reasons, or if they have unused SAGE packages or unused Cornell fellowship packages, they can redeploy those towards current students, or if they know they have additional TA lines. So again, those are the conversations that are happening, less about individual students, more about cohort size and total number, mapping that against total number of funding slots.
Thank you. And to follow up, so I understand that there's a million pieces that go into moving money around, and so I don't want to flatten the work that you're doing. But I am curious if there's, given the circumstances that are so different this year in many ways, I'm wondering if there's anything coming out of your office or even just messaging about possibilities of expediting that a little bit this year, or is there just too many unknowns?
So by expediting, you're saying certainty around funding for advanced students beyond their funding commitment, or
yeah, I think just given everything that's going on right now,
So a couple of weeks ago, Dean Bora and I did reach out to DGSs and asked them to reach out specifically to students and just share what are their plans, right? Like, just be transparent about their local plans. I hope many DGSs did that. I know it's a crazy time of year, and maybe not everyone has done that yet. We can nudge them to do this. And the other thing that I would strongly nudge them to do is finalize fall appointments as quickly as possible so that you, as students, have certainty sooner rather than later around what your TA assignments are. And I know that that's been a point of feedback that sometimes students only hear about that late in the summer. So just getting those decisions out as early as possible, recognizing that things change in August and there's always sections added and there's new TA slots that open up. I think there's always some changes that happen late in the cycle, but it's a very fair point, Becca, that just having certainty and having transparency is something that's quite reasonable to ask for. So we will push for that.
Okay. So yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, one last question real quick. It came through the chat to me. It's from Aditya Varanasi. My question is, for the students whose research depend on international fieldwork, what are the changes we can expect in funding in the summer and the fall? That's his question, if you can take that.
Yeah, so the recent announcements around travel is encouraging, that there's more opportunity, the petition for travel itself, essential travel, is that part will fall away, that the barriers will still be around ITAR approval, which is really around the safety of the traveler and the safety of the destination. So that's still a challenge. With the opening up of travel, the graduate school will resume their research travel grant program. The in absentia status, those will be more sort of mainstreamed again. So those will all be encouraging. The actual funding for students who are traveling, those will typically be a mix of either external fellowships, Cornell fellowships, sometimes Fulbright and Audi, other types of things, FLOSS awards. So I would see more towards normalcy on the funding side. Obviously, there's still challenges because a lot of places in the world are still going to be very precarious, and that, I think, is going to be the big barrier, but pretty close to normal for travel funding.
Okay. So thank you very much. And one quick question is, will you be able to make this the information as slides available to us that you've shown us today?
Yeah, I already sent them over to the Office of Assembly, so I think
okay. Okay, so we'll get that out to everyone. And so thank you so much for your time and answering our questions and presenting this information today. But now we need to, I'm afraid we need to move on to other business. And since next, I want to make sure that we get to approve the minutes, we need to take the roll call again. It seems like we have more members here. And it's also come to my attention that I may have miscounted with the new voting members that the quorum should actually be 13. Is that right, Coral?
Yes.
Okay. Well, given that, and if there are no objections on that, the way I calculated that, then let's go ahead with the roll call again.
Isabella Harnick?
Here.
Mila Kantar? Jack Levin? Matthew Bulch? Stephanie Lopez?
Here.
Martique Chatterjee? Alexandra Klyustova?
Yes.
Chris O'Connor?
Here.
Jordan Dotzel? Henry Williams? Meredith Welch?
Here.
Charlie Day?
Here.
Chris Anglin? Natalie Gonzalez?
Here.
Chen Liu? Christine Oenewa? Ryan Maloney? Amanda Cirillo? Alexandra Pressure?
Here.
Matthew Drescher? Nick Danov?
Here.
Akarsha Pandey? Kavya Krishnan?
Here.
Caroline Steingart? And David Kent?
Here.
We have 12 voting members present.
Okay. So here's what I think we're going to do. I think that, in my opinion, for us to conduct elections, that does not need to have a quorum, because that is an election that's open not just to voting members, but to all members of the JPSA. So I think that we can proceed, and since our bylaws require that we have the elections at this date, then I think I'm going to proceed with that. And then if we want, we can try to take quorum one more time, and or we can take, if there, we get to the point where we need to take a recess or something to try to get one more person here, then we can do that. But for now, I think we'll move on to elections. And all these elected positions are for a term beginning on June 1st until May 31st.
Sorry, point of order.
I'm sorry?
Point of order.
Yeah.
There's someone in the chat, Casey Laurent, voting member, I believe.
Casey Laurent? We called for chairperson. So Coral, did you call all the chairpersons?
I did. I had Nick, Akarsha, Kavya, Caroline, and David. Oh, never mind. I did miss Casey.
Okay, so Casey's here.
Yes, yes.
So is Bridget.
Okay. So I'm gonna venture to say that we do actually have quorum then. Maybe we just missed those people then.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, in that case, let's go and do the approval of the minutes. Wendy?
I just have a point of clarification, I think. Bridget said her name wasn't called, but it's because you called the new voting members.
The new voting members, yes.
And so, the current chairpersons who are also voting members, and then the individuals who are from, like, the Vet School and the Johnson School and the Law School. That would be why, Bridget, your name was not called.
Yeah, so we're going off of the new graduate school voting members, which have been inducted for this starting on this term. And I explained this at the very beginning of the meeting why we decided to do that, and I offered people to raise any objections to it, and I didn't hear from anyone. So
okay, that makes sense. Sorry for the confusion.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, it's my fault. Yeah, Cody.
Yeah, just as a point of order, I'm not sure. Also, if I am. Since I'm the chair I'm not a voting member anymore, but as the chair of the
yes.
Faculty Awards, am I a voting member right
you
now?
You are a voting member, yeah.
Okay, then I guess it should be noted that I'm here.
Okay. So Coral, I think you just missed those last couple people on the list then.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so it seems that we have a quorum then. And what I'll do is I'll move on to the approval of the meeting minutes for April 12th. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion or amendments to the minutes? All right. Seeing none, are there any objections to unanimously confirming the minutes as they stand? All right. Seeing none, then the minutes for April 12th are approved as they currently stand. And now we will move on to elections. Again, as I mentioned, all of these positions are for a period beginning June 1st, 2021 until May 31st, 2022. And we will begin with the officers. And what I'm going to do is for each of these positions, if the current occupant of this position is present, just say a few words about what the position entails. If there's anything you'd like to add, please keep it very brief because we have a lot to cover. And then I will open the floor for nominations for each of these. So the first position is the president of the GPSA. That's my position. My term ends on May 31st, and I would say that there's a lot to my position, which I could say, but what it really boils down to is three key things, which is as president, you get to run the meetings and set the agenda for the meetings. So you get to decide and invite speakers, who gets to come and speak, who we get to ask questions to, how we arrange the agenda to order business, and which resolutions get introduced in what order. Second, you are the public representative of the GPSA. If there's any public events at the university in which graduate and professional students need to be represented, then the president is the one who has to do that. You're also the first point of contact for a lot of the external committees and a lot of other organizations on campus that need the GPSA to address any key issues. And so you're also, in that sense, required to be the leader of the executive committee, who in each of those have different responsibilities. And lastly, to raise key issues to the graduate school. So you meet with the dean of the graduate school and the dean of students around once a month, in which case you raise a lot of the issues that have been brought to the GPSA to them, and you get to ask questions and try to form constructive solutions to problems. So I think those are the main things, that responsibilities that the president has. And I am now opening the floor to nominations for president. Logan.
Hey, David, thank you for recognizing me. I am going to nominate James Rowe for president.
Okay, James Rowe, do you accept the nomination?
I do accept the nomination.
Okay, thank you very much. Would you mind introducing yourself and saying a few words, please?
Absolutely. Well, first, I want to thank you, David and Logan, for introducing me to this position. I'm extremely excited about the opportunity. In terms of my background, I'm sure, you know, you'll go check LinkedIn and know more about myself than I do. But I come from a military family, so I started off in the Marine Corps myself. I've worked in a couple of professional capacities, but I've spent the majority of my time in academia. I have political science degrees from George Washington and Columbia, public administration degree from Harvard, and an MBA, and hopefully a JD degree from here at Cornell. I love it here. It shouldn't surprise you that my time at law school has convinced me to continue on with my academic studies, and I now plan to pursue a PhD after I finish my third year at law school, continue my research interests after that, and hopefully in academic capacity. My interest in the GPSA presidency is to give back to the school. Like I said, I'm here through two degrees, and I haven't had the opportunity to give back in the way that I would like. I'm not interested in high-profile resolutions or actions, whatever they may be. I simply want to be able to be president for a year, look back, and know that the graduate and professional students are a little better off when I leave than they were when I started. That being said, if there are big issues that come up, I'm fully up to the challenge and willing to take those on. But I also like to caution that I like to take things at a slow pace. You know, things can't always be completed immediately, like some people like. Sometimes it's better to address bigger issues and smaller pieces and have things accomplished that way. So that's all I've got. Thank you, and I give the floor back to you, David.
David, you're muted.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for James? All right, well, in that case, are there any other nominations for president? All right, in that case, let me just say that, James, we've spoken before this meeting, and I have to say that GPSA, that I entirely endorse your candidacy. I know that's maybe a little bit too much coming from the chair to say this, but I really do believe that you will be a great president next year. And with that, I think that what I'll do is say, since this is an uncontested race for the president as the way it is currently, then I will just raise if there are any objections to electing James by unanimous consent, by acclamation to this position, or if anyone would like to cast a private ballot. If so, raise your hand. Any objections? Seeing none, then James, you're hereby elected to be GPSA president for next term starting June 1st. We really, please everyone give a round of applause for James and congratulations for this new position.
Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate it and I look forward to working with you all.
Great. All right, and so the next position is Executive Vice President. Nick, would you mind saying a few words about what the Vice President does?
Absolutely. So the Vice President is the chair of the Executive Committee. Your job would be to schedule the Executive Committee meetings and set the agendas for those meetings. And then also new membership recruitment falls under the Executive Vice President. There's a lot of tasks that might get delegated from the president or generally from the executive committee that the executive vice president takes care of. Generally, some logistical questions as well fall under the role.
Okay. So are there any nominations for executive vice president? I should say that one person has reached out to nominate, but I'm not supposed to do so as the chair. So, but you are welcome to nominate yourself if you'd like. There's no, you don't have to find someone else to nominate you. So,
David, I'll nominate. Yeah.
Okay.
Isabella Harnick.
Okay, great. So, Isabella, do you accept the nomination?
I do.
Okay, great. Would you mind please introducing yourself?
Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Bella, and I am a five-year student in the Sloan Program in Healthcare Administration. Cornell has long been my home, and I'm excited to continue to grow as I continue to pursue my graduate studies. I have absolutely loved serving on the Dean's Undergraduate Advisory Council within the College of Human Ecology as the co-president. And as I continue to look for more opportunities to be involved on a graduate level and also on a university-wide level, I'm interested in being EVP. And I am excited by the opportunity to work alongside James and support his position.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions for Bella? Okay, seeing none, are there any other nominations for Executive Vice President? Okay, seeing none, are there any objections to electing Bella by unanimous consent and would prefer to have a ballot? Okay, seeing none then, I hereby declare that Bella, you are elected to Executive Vice President for next year's term. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. So the next position is Vice President of Operations. So the current VP of Operations is not present at today's meeting, but I can say just a few words myself about what the position entails. Basically, the Vice President of Operations is responsible for running the Committee on operations and staffing, so that which is brings together all the chairpersons of the different standing committees to make decisions about staffing those committees. So you're supposed to be active in reaching out to people to get involved in the standing committees, and you will be responsible for making sure that graduate and professional students are represented on in committees external to the GPSA. So committees like the Public Safety Advisory Committee, committees liaison positions in the other assemblies, and there's a full list in the bylaws which states all the committees in which we're entitled to a representative. And as a VP of Ops, you're responsible for making sure that those positions are staffed and that you are working with the executive committee to reach out to people to do that. So if there are no questions about what the position entails, then I will open the floor for nominations. Would anyone like to be nominated for VP of Ops? And this is the third position on the executive committee. So all the that it also involves meeting with the graduate school regularly too. Okay, seeing none, I'm gonna move on to another position. And if anyone is interested, please send a message in the chat, in which case I'll come back to this position later in the meeting. But for now, I will say that this position is vacant and there will be another election held in the first meeting of the fall semester. The next position is the Vice President of Communications. So Kavya, would you mind saying a few words about that position?
Sure. So Vice President of Communications is, like the name suggests, mostly you're communicating with the outside broader Cornell community. It's taking care of all the social media accounts, seeing if anyone reaches out to you on any of those accounts, emailing students, especially if there are like just important Cornell information, but also specifically events by the committees that are happening. And you're on the executive board, so it's going to be meeting with the graduate school, meeting with the dean of students and things like that.
Okay, thank you. Are there any nominations? Okay, seeing none, then this position will also remain vacant until the first meeting of fall semester, in which case we will have an election to fill this vacancy. But thank you, Kavya, for serving on this in this position for this year. We really appreciate it. So the next position is the General Committee of the Graduate School, which is a two-year term. So we have two representatives to the general committee, and so one of them is currently in the middle of their term, and the other term is about to end. And I believe the term, which is now becoming vacant, is Becca's term. Am I correct? If you're here, would you mind saying a few words about what the committee does? I'm not sure if she's still here. No, I guess not. I think the... I have the description up here real quick. The brief description is that it is the administrative, legislative, and judicial board of the graduate school and approves revisions to the code of legislation, approves appointments to the graduate faculty, and makes recommendations for new advanced degrees. Okay. So are there any nominations for the general committee?
I'd like to nominate Nicola Downer.
Okay, Nick, do you accept the nomination?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Would you mind saying a few words about why you'd like to run for this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think my time on the GPSA was really exciting and great, and we got to make some really impactful changes, and I really enjoyed working with everyone. Particularly, I'm very proud of the work on the ITAP, which I'll be talking about later today. But I think that being on the General Committee of the Graduate School will be a better role for me just because it deals specifically with issues pertaining to graduate students and specifically questions of legislation of the graduate school, which is something I'm very interested in. I served on the University Assembly's Codes and Judicial Committee, and I think with that experience, I will be a good fit for this position.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Are there any questions for Nick? Seeing none, are there any further nominations for the general committee? Okay, also seeing none, then are there any objections to electing Nick by unanimous consent to the position? All right, also seeing none, then Nick, you are hereby elected to this 2-year term on the General Committee, and I wish you the best in your work serving the GPSA.
Thank you so much.
All right. Now we're going to move on to 4 committee chairperson positions. Again, these are currently staff, but they're so if you're currently the chairperson, you're welcome to run again, but these are open elections now. The first is Diversity and International Students Committee, which is currently run by Alexandra Prescher. Alexandra, I'm not sure if you had the chance. You were elected very late in the year, so I'm not sure if you had a chance to have any meetings, but is there anything you'd like to say about the committee's work? Or, yeah.
Yeah, so it's still a work in progress, working on it for the rest of the month. But so far, I'm sorry, my cat is here too. It seems I definitely had some good support from Kavya and another previous chair, so you've definitely got support. I will happily continue working on the committee next year, and it's kind of what it sounds like, working on diversity-related things and international student-related things, so putting on events or help working with other groups that are putting on events, stuff like that.
Okay, thank you. So I should now say, since you're your first, do you want to nominate yourself again to run for next year for the chair?
No, thank you.
Okay. Are there any other nominations for DISC? And I should just say real quick that this is typically a committee which has a relatively large budget compared to the other committees. So there is a lot that you can do in terms of funding wise for events if you are to, but we need someone to run the meeting before you people can meet and people who are interested can be involved. So I just want to put that out there.
I also want to add, you get to meet a lot of people across campus. You work with the Office of Inclusion and Student Engagement a lot. You get to work with all different schools and their diversity council. So there's a lot you can do with this. Yeah.
Okay. Any nominations? All right. Seeing none, then this position will also be vacant until we have another election in the fall then. And we're going to move on now to the Student Advocacy Committee. So, David Kent, do you mind saying a few words?
Sure. I'm not sure how long I've been doing this, but not too long. But so far, we've been meeting every other week. Actually, there's a little blurb in the bylaws, which I'll read the topics. So it's issues of diversity, finances, stipend levels, mental and physical health, accessibility, childcare, and the general well-being of the graduate and professional student community. And so this year we've worked on one resolution, which you heard some information related to today, requesting some information from the graduate school about funding. And there's, I think, one yearly town hall that the committee organizes, which is coming up. So that's my blurb.
Okay, great. Would you like to nominate yourself to run for chair next year?
Yeah, if no one else has a burning desire, I will self-nominate.
Okay. Any questions for David in his candidacy? Okay, seeing none, are there any other nominations for Student Advocacy? All right, seeing none, are there any objections to electing David by unanimous consent? All right, seeing none, then David, you can get to continue in your role. Congratulations and thank you so much for your work for the GPSA. So next we have the Programming Board. Could the chair please speak up and say a few words?
Yeah, hi. I hope you guys can hear me. Yep. Okay, good. So I'm Casey, and I've been the president of the Programming Board for the past 2 years. So we organize like non-academic events, so
BRB events, wine tours, and then the biggest one every year is, except for these last 2 years, is grad ball. So it's a lot of fun, and you get to plan whatever programs you pretty much want to plan. So I'm leaving next year, but I will be around for the summer, so I'm happy to help anybody who's hopping on board. But yeah, that's about it.
All right, so I take it then that you're not going to nominate yourself, since you're thank you so much for helping out. And are there any nominations for the programming board? All right, so seeing none, then this position will also be vacant for until we have another election in the beginning of the fall. But thank you so much, Casey, for all the work you've done for the programming board this year. We really appreciate it. And last is Faculty Teaching, Advising, and Mentorship Award Committee. Let's hear about that.
Hey, yeah, you can hear about that from me. My name is Cody. I've been the chair of the Faculty Teaching, Advising, and Mentoring Award for the last 2 years. And much like with the programming board, it's been a weird 2 years to be in charge of this committee. But basically what we do, we're really only active during the spring, and that is to give out these awards. And so the process, which is ongoing right now, the nominations are open, is to put out a call for nominations, normally a little bit earlier than right now. But to put out a call for nominations, get letters from across the graduate school, including as well as former students and alumni, and to basically decide who should be receiving these awards. It's done in sort of a committee format, and then it's a really fun celebration to give out these awards at the end of the year. It's a handful of meetings, and it is very sort of heartwarming and enjoyable of an experience. So if you want to get involved but don't want to have too much of a time commitment, it's a great position to be more involved in and to kind of get more involved in the GPSA without committing yourself to too much.
All right. Thanks so much, Cody. Are you going to nominate yourself? I'm sorry, I missed it. You said
you were going. I would be happy to help out next year. However, I would rather not continue in this role for a third year.
Okay, understood. Well, thank you so much for the work you've done this year. It's been great. So are there any nominations for Faculty Teaching and Award Committee? All right, seeing none, then the chair of this committee will be vacant also until we begin in the fall of next year. But thank you so much, Cody, for the work you've done, and I look forward to seeing how the award process will go for the rest of this semester. So thank you. Okay, so next we have the University Assembly, and so the president is an ex officio member of the University Assembly, but we also need to elect 4 representatives to the University Assembly who for a 1 year, I think at least a 1 year term, right? It's up to us to decide but normally it's a 1 year term. And I see that Logan is here. Would you be willing to say a few words about what the University Assembly does and why it's important?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. David. Thanks for the floor again.
You're muted.
Thanks, David. I'm on my phone right now because I'm also in class, so sorry, everyone, for that. I'm Logan Kenny. I'm chair of the University Assembly. This was my third year on the UA, and I was elected through the GPSA as a first-year law student without actually attending a GPSA meeting at the first meeting in September, which was pretty cool. So what I could tell you about the UA is that we are this independent island of all of the constituent groups that come together. So you have the Student Assembly, the GPSA, the Faculty Senate, and the Employee Assembly all in one room to argue it out. And you can have many faces on the UA. You can be Logan, non-chair Logan, who is fiery and likes to fight
for rights very aggressively but respectfully. You can be a GPSA president, David, and know that your position is to represent your entire constituent group and be incredibly wonderful, well-mannered, well-spoken, and say things when the time is right. You can be Jeff P., who you all know, and I don't think I have to say anything else. Very neutral. Or, yeah, I guess the whole point is you don't have to be one way or another. You get to work on policy issues that range from the code of conduct to student rights, faculty rights, just the Cornell community in general. And I think it's a testament that I joined as a first-year law student and I progressed. I was a voting member, then I was a chair of a committee, and now I'm chair of the entire thing, and I got a gavel like David. And yeah, I wouldn't say anything bad except if you want to be quiet, but remember to show up and vote. And if you want to be loud, be freaking loud and just be respectful. But yeah, please consider running. And David, as soon as you open up nominations, I have two, so I'm excited.
Let me just
I'm happy to answer any questions also about the position.
Yeah, well, let's do that now. Are there any questions about the university assembly that Logan can answer? But what?
I guess, David, could I quickly add just that there's standing committees. So if you join the university assembly, you can join a standing committee as well. And you could be the chair of that committee or just on it in general. And then further, all of the presidents of the constituent groups are automatically on the university assembly. So James will be on the university assembly.
Right, right. And I should also say that if you are having another officer position in the GPSA or another chair position, you can also serve on, do this role simultaneously. So you can also run for UA rep as well. And then the UA meets roughly every other week, kind of about as often as the GPSA meets, right? Although not on the same day. Usually it's Tuesdays, right? Like Tuesday afternoons. Yeah.
Yeah, we're Tuesday. The first and the third of the month from 4:30 until 6 p.m.
Right. Okay. Are there any nominations then? Yeah, Logan.
Can I nominate two people at the same time or do I do them separately?
I think let's have them introduce each other one at a time, but you can state their names.
I'll keep my hand up if that's okay.
Sure. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to start with Ian Akushoglu. And sorry if I butchered your last name, Ian.
Okay. Ian, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. The last name was pretty close attempt.
Okay, great. Do you accept the nomination?
I do. Thank you.
All right. And a few words of introduction about yourself?
Sure, David. Good evening, everyone. My name is Ian Akushoglu, and I'm a second-year student at Cornell Law School. I'm interested in serving as a representative of this body on the University Assembly because, first and foremost, I believe in the importance of effective advocacy of student interests in university governance, and that governance is more effective when done collaboratively. For a little bit of background on myself, I attended American University for undergrad, where I studied history and economics. After college, I was an officer in the Navy for about 6 years, during which time I led a division of about 20 sailors. Although I was their leader, I also fulfilled an important representative role for them. While it may seem trivial, addressing issues such as the ability of military service members to secure easy access to adequate childcare while they're at work, to make sure their car is able to start in the morning, or to make sure their family's taken care of while they're deployed, has a direct effect on overall success of a larger military unit. Effectively communicating these concerns up the military chain of command while also helping to address them was a big part of my job nearly every day. Before coming to Cornell, I spent my first year of law school at Vanderbilt. While I was there, I represented my 1L section, that's the first year of law school, in the Vanderbilt Student Bar Association. And I also served as the law school representative on the Student Services Fee Committee, which is responsible for allocating the roughly $2 million collected in annual student activity fees among various student organizations. In both of these roles, I worked to resolve a number of student concerns, including the quality of the coffee served in the law school cafeteria, as well as the rising costs of certain law school events and their impact on students' pocketbooks. Furthermore, I believe my status as a transfer Cornellian gives me a perspective on some of the unique challenges and concerns that transfer students have at Cornell. Ultimately, graduate and professional students have distinct concerns compared to the rest of the university body. I hope to continue to build off these successes that previous representatives of this body have enjoyed and continue to make Cornell a diverse and equitable community where all stakeholders feel represented and included. Thank you, and I yield the floor.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for Ian? All right, seeing none, let's hear from all the other nominations first before we vote. So Logan, who is the next nomination?
Okay, I am going to enthusiastically nominate Nick Deneb for 2 years on the UA.
Okay, Nick, do you accept?
I absolutely wholeheartedly accept, and I'm honored to have been nominated by Logan for this.
Okay, great. And just a few words, I mean, you're already on the UA, but is there any few words about why you want to continue?
I've really enjoyed my time on the University Assembly, particularly on the Codes and Judicial Committee. I really hope that I'll be able to continue representing the GPSA, not only in the General Committee of the Graduate School, but also in the University Assembly. I think it's really important that graduate students have a voice in both of these bodies, particularly with the UA, since all the constituencies are represented there, and I would love for us to have lots of vocal members advocating for us. As an international student, I think I'll be able to advocate for international student rights in that body as well. And given my previous experience on the University Assembly, I think I'll be able to kind of provide some form of anchoring to our previous policies and ways of dealing with the University Assembly as a constituent group.
Okay, thanks. Are there any questions for Nick? All right, seeing none, are there any more nominations there are two more open positions. All right, seeing none, since we have two out of the four positions nominated, I will just call for any objections to electing both Nick and Ian unanimously. Are there any objections to doing so? All right, seeing no objection, Ian and Nick, you are hereby elected to the University Assembly, along with James, who will be our ex officio representative. So, and then there'll be another election for the remaining two positions in our next regular meeting. So congratulations, and thank you so much for serving us.
Thank you.
Okay. So this concludes our elections section of today's meeting, and I'm really glad to see all of the new faces who will be leading the GPSA next year. Our next order of business is division breakout for about 10 minutes. And for the divisions of the graduate school, there are a number of vacancies that you're welcome to fill at this time. So humanities, you have two vacancies, life sciences, two vacancies, physical sciences, one vacancy, and social sciences, two vacancies. So you're welcome. Let's go into division breakout now, and then afterwards we'll decide whether we want to extend the time of the meeting to deal with the business we'd like to deal with. Okay. So as I mentioned, so in the division breakout for the graduate school divisions, you are able to elect in those rooms to fill one of the vacancies, which I mentioned. Were any of you able to do so? Because if so, then someone can start to assume the term now, actually. Cody.
Yeah, so physical sciences was able to fill that position. So that role will be filled by Sam Brechtani.
Okay, Sam, are you here?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So congratulations. You can start to vote starting today. And is there anyone else? Okay, so Sam, please, if you could send an email to me or anyone on the executive board so that we can make sure that you are added to the right mailing list. I'll give you my NetID in the chat real quick, and then you can contact us.
All right. Thanks.
It's DD567. Okay, so we're now going to move on to unfinished business, which is Resolution 12, University Policy 1.3, and the ITAP. So, Nick, you are bringing this committee report to us on behalf of the Executive Committee. You're recognized.
And I'd also like to motion to extend the meeting until 7:10 p.m.
Okay. Is there a second to the motion to extend the meeting till 7:10?
Seconded.
Seconded. Are there any objections to extending the meeting by unanimous consent? All right. Seeing no objection, then the meeting will be extended until 7:10. And Nick, you have the floor.
Absolutely. I'll share my screen. Sure. So here we go. This is, everyone can see this. So this is resolution 12, which we brought quite a while ago. We've amended it since. We had a list of requests to the graduate school and the provost, but instead of voting on it, we sent it for committee review, tasking myself and the other sponsors to meet with the graduate school and the dean and the provost to kind of see where we can find common ground and whether we can resolve this without a resolution. And in fact, we were able to do that in a way that I think is beneficial to everyone. So what I'm showing you now is the summary of our meeting. So this is a kind of agreement that we've reached with Dean Bohr and Provost Kotlikoff and everyone else that's been involved in the process. But to basically summarize it, what we're going to be doing is make sure that there's a clear and timely communication to incoming students that they will be subject to some form of English language assessment if they're going to be TAs. There should be clear and public guidelines for who is required to participate in it so that we don't run into issues where people think they are exempt from it or think they're not exempt from it. And there's just general uncertainty all around. The ITAP office has not given clear feedback as to why someone failed the exam. Now they will do that going forward. The GPSA will maintain a clear line of communication with everyone. The GPSA will also identify and appoint, and I think this one's very important, graduate and or professional students to the ITAP Advisory Committee, which will be tasked with reforming the ITAP. And the GPSA will continue to collect feedback and share it with everyone and, of course, assist with implementing these points and the new changes to the ITAP. So this is something that I worked on this entire year. It was the reason that I joined the GPSA, and I am so glad that we were able to reach this agreement. And I think it will really benefit international students at Cornell. So with that, I would really like if we could vote on resolution 12, just so that we have a resolution actually recognizing this agreement that we've reached. However, if we don't, we'll just sign the agreement as previously agreed upon. However, I do think that having the resolution would make it nice to just keep it formalized. So with that, I'd like to motion that we one discard resolution 12 as I initially suggested it when I initially brought it to the floor, and two, substitute it with this resolution 12 that I just shared, and three, I'd like to call the question on resolution 12.
All right, let's deal with this a couple steps at a time. There's a motion on the floor to substitute entirely the previous version of Resolution 12 and then revise it with the language that you just showed us on the screen. So is there you've made that motion. Is there a second to that motion? Maybe if you could keep it up on the screen while we talk about it, since we have to open up for discussion.
Yep, absolutely.
Good, yeah.
Here we go.
Okay.
Oh, did I? Sorry.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. All right. Is there a second to replacing the previous version with what we see here?
Second.
All right. It's been seconded. Is there any? And now we will. First we have to vote on substituting it, and then once we vote on that, then we can discuss the resolution itself. So, is there any discussion on the motion to substitute the resolution entirely this language? Okay, seeing none, then let's vote now just on the question of whether to substitute the language that we saw before with the language that we see here. So, and I'm going to put the question before the assembly. Please press yes if you were in favor of doing so, and press the X button no if you are against doing so for voting members. Okay, I saw 9 in favor and none against, and I think with a last roll call we took, there was 14, I think. So that's about five abstentions. Then the motion passes to substitute that language. And we are now on discussion of the resolution itself. Is there any discussion of the resolution on the memorandum or any of the contents you see here? If so, please raise your hand. Okay. Seeing none, then I'm going to put the question before the assembly on whether to adopt Resolution 12 that has been so amended. Those who are in favor of adopting the resolution, please press yes and then press a no if you are opposed to it. I see 10 in favor, 11 in favor, and none against. Okay, so with 11 in favor and 4 against, then the resolution is adopted. And thank you, Nick. So I also wanted to mention, I just saw in the chat someone direct messaging that there were also some other life sciences members who filled the two positions for voting members. So Marina Minnelli and Ruth Epstein, are you both here?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So great. So you've been recognized as voting members to fill life sciences. And I think that you can, I'm sorry I didn't see you before, but I think that you can start voting now if you haven't already as voting members for life sciences. Okay. All right. So the next order of business is a new business. And I should ask, has the attendance sheet been distributed to all the field representatives yet?
No, I didn't, because of all the turnover today. And since
okay.
No one is in trouble of losing funding, because no one, even if they miss this meeting, it wouldn't change their funding. I just figured we don't need to have an attendance sheet, but I can send it out if you'd like.
All right. I will leave that up to you if it's your call, but I just want to make sure that there wasn't a mistake or anything. Okay, so first order business, the next resolution, our new business, is Resolution 18, Standing Rules. And since that is a resolution that I propose, I am rescinding the chair to Nick while we discuss this resolution. So, Nick, yeah.
All right. So with that, we have Resolution 18 on the floor. And I would like to give the floor to David to present the resolution.
Yeah, thank you. Hold on one second. I'm trying to pull up. All right, if I can share my screen. Okay, so one of the things that I've wanted to do for a long time with the GPSA is to adopt certain standing rules which will embody the concrete conventions that we expect to do business in the assembly. This is something that the student assembly has and the employee assembly has, but the GPSA does not have. And I can say that as someone, when I first started out as GPSA president, there were a lot of unwritten conventions that were, I was expected to uphold, that were not written down in any formal procedural way in the charter and bylaws. So this is simply a document that will, where we can write down those changes. It doesn't supersede the charter or bylaws. So if there's any conflict, then the charter and bylaws will hold over that. And it's very easily amended or rescinded. It's by simply a majority vote, you can change anything that's in here. And I don't have it up here. Hold on a second. But the key things that you have to understand materially is that we agreed to meet first and third Mondays whenever the assembly is in session. We set some procedures for how we might conduct electronic meetings. So if we decide by something like a two-thirds vote, we want to have meetings on Zoom, even if there's not a pandemic, we can have a way to try to decide that. And then most of this falls under the scope of ethics. So it's about how the president is expected to order business, how it's supposed to allot time for unfinished business, how you're supposed to call upon people in debate in a way which is impartial and tries to balance out the pros and cons of different sides, things like this. And voting is that it sets a default method of voting as raising of hands and for elections as ballot. So again, these are things which are conventions, which aren't written down. They're not procedural rules, but they're things that we just agree to hold each other to, and I want to have them written down in some way. And yeah, I'll leave it there. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for that, David. Do we have any questions or any discussion on this resolution? All right. Seeing none, I'm opening the floor to any motions.
I will make a motion. Usually standing rules are only adopted at the beginning of a year, and then they're reviewed in the first meeting of each year. So I think that since these will not really be in effect for this assembly, what I'd like to do is just postpone any vote on this until the next regularly scheduled meeting in the fall, and then just set a convention going forward of always looking at these in the first meeting and then adopting them or making any amendments to them. So I make that motion to postpone until next meeting.
All right. There is a motion to postpone until the next meeting. I'm going to approve this by general consent unless someone is opposed. If you are opposed, please speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay. So this motion is unanimously approved. And we have one more resolution for today, Resolution 19, also sponsored by David. David, the floor is yours.
Yeah, thanks. I'll share my screen one more time. Okay, so I'm not even sure. This came to my attention recently because there are several student groups which have asked me whether there are ways in which unused field organization funds can be spent toward alleviating the pandemic. And also, I was looking at the budget and of the GPSA committees over this past year, and it's really a shame that because of the pandemic, we aren't able to use a vast majority of the funds toward some purpose, and that it just sort of carries over to the next year. But in my opinion, every year, we should adopt a budget that is only the amount that we can spend. And if we don't spend it, we need to make some effort to use it on something, right? And so what I'm doing here, I'm not sure if this is something that the university allows to do, but I'm opening it up for discussion anyway, which is to take the administrative budget, the surplus, whatever's unused of the administrative budget, the travel budget, and the executive budget, and donating it to charity. And now I'm not sure if we can do this because I know that under the GPSAFC funding guidelines, field organizations are not allowed to make donations directly to charity. So I don't know if under the guidelines, it says that it's a university policy. So I don't know if that's a policy that applies also to our standing committees or any of the other like surplus funds that we may have in those committees. So if someone happens to know the answer to this, I'd really be happy to know that. But if not, I want to put this on the table and I want to say, take all this extra funding and give it directly to pandemic relief, because that's obviously something much more urgent, and we shouldn't be accumulating unused funds toward this purpose if we don't have any use for it, right? So with that, I yield the floor. Yeah.
Thank you, David. I think this is a great resolution, and honestly, if we pass it, I don't even think it's on us to decide whether it's allowed or not, because the president can choose to reject it if she feels that we can't do that. But I do think it's a good thing to have passed and put on the president's agenda. So with that, I'd like to open the floor to discussion, questions, and motions.
I have a motion to extend the meeting by 10 more minutes.
All right, motion to extend the meeting until 7:21. Does anyone oppose this? We'll probably be done before that.
Yeah. Just to be sure.
Okay, seeing none, approved by unanimous consent.
Okay.
Sorry, I have a question. There's no opposition or anything, but I just have a general question.
Yes, you are recognized.
The resolution says donate the surplus funds, but like, where is it going? Is that, or does that come after?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it says that I wanted to give it to Direct Relief, which is an organization, which is like a top-rated humanitarian organization. Oh, okay. That gives things like funding and medical supplies to places where they need pandemic relief. They recently gave $5 million to oxygen concentrators in places like India. This is something where I feel like if there's a way for us to do it such that we can get the money to places in need, I figure this is as good a place as any to do that. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Kavya.
Thanks, Nick. So I know this is a conversation that has come up before, but does this open the door for groups to donate money? In the sense that I think that's a good idea, though, but is FC funds allowed under those circumstances?
I can answer this. So under the FC funding guidelines, it explicitly says that the university policy says that no campus group can donate directly to charitable organizations. However, there's rules for doing fundraisers for that. So, and I didn't really know that when I wrote this. So, and I'm not sure if that means that this also applies to the assembly's funds, because we're not under presumably the FC funding guidelines, but we're under the university's policy. So I don't know which university policy is saying that we can't do this. So.
Right. I'm just curious if this is something where groups that aren't using their FC funding can make requests. It might get very complicated, so I don't want to open the door to too much, but.
My understanding is they cannot, no.
Okay.
All right. Do we have any other motions? We have a question. Ruth.
Yeah, I have a question about the charity and the money specifically going to charity. I was thinking, is there like a charity more connected to our campus? You know, I imagine there are students who need food and other necessities. So I was wondering if maybe we could spend that money more closer to home rather than sending it to some charity none of us really have a connection to.
Yeah, so I made the decision that if you have a suggestion and would like, if you know a charity close to the home to make an amendment, then please, by all means do so. But the only thing that came to my mind was, the money we gave to the Access Fund, which is a university run, source of support for students. I was thinking about that, but I realized that they don't need this much money to fulfill their purpose because there aren't enough, students who are actually making relevant requests. And because of the rules about that, there's a limited amount of impact we can make that we haven't done already through the Access Fund. So I didn't really see that as viable. And my thinking that was that we should be using the funds towards something where it helps the greatest number of people, like alleviates the greatest suffering in the world right now. Because, you know, this is the money that I've stated here is actually a small part of the money which has been appropriated to all the different committees, but I don't control those committees. It's up to the chair people of those committees to make decisions about what they want to do with those funds, right? So I just think that it's a small amount of money, but it's not something where I have an idea about how to affect our immediate campus. And it's my opinion that it's better used to spend this toward a more global purpose, if it's possible to do that. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, do we have any motions on the floor?
And again, if there's someone who knows for a fact that this is not allowed, please say so, because I could, or else I'll find out after we vote on it.
Motion to approve the resolution, or vote on the resolution.
All right, we have a motion calling the question. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, motioned and seconded. So with that, everyone in favor, voting members, please press the green yes button in your reactions section. And if you're against, press the red X button. And if you are indifferent, then do the party emoji. Okay, seeing 10 in favor, 0 abstentions, 0 against, this resolution passes. I yield the chair back to David.
All right, thanks so much, Nick, and thank you all for considering that resolution. And we'll be sure to update you on whether this is going to go forward. And then But I also encourage all the committee chair people who do have budgets which are unused about thinking about there's still time left for you to spend it on something. So I hope that you'll consider the campus first, but it's always possible for you to build on what we started here. So seeing that we have three more minutes, we'll proceed to do very briefly committee updates. So Executive Committee, Nick.
I already gave my update with the resolution, and congratulations to the new executive committee, and thank you so much to everyone on the GPSA for this past year.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for serving us on the executive committee, too, as vice president. Communications, Kavya.
No, I think most of the communications is done thanks to the voting. Congratulations to everyone that the new executive board.
And thank you for serving this year too, Kavya. All right, operations, Mardik is not here. Finance, Caroline?
Hi, no updates. We just have our last meeting tomorrow night.
All right, thanks so much. Appropriations, Akarsha? I don't think Akarsha is here. Nope. DISC, we already heard from Alexandra. Is there any further updates on DISC?
Nothing else.
Okay. Faculty teaching, Cody, we already, any further updates?
Yeah, I'll just say, please, the announcement that was sent out by Kavya the other day about the call for nominations, please forward it to your constituents. There should be an announcement, I hope, in the graduate school news going out. The nominations are open for the next couple of weeks. And so please just get the word out there, and that's it.
All right, thank you so much. Programming, Casey, or any further notes?
Yeah, so since I'm going to be around for the summer, we're hoping to plan a, we're currently working on planning an activity bingo for graduate and professional students, which pretty much consists of us helping out, like, local businesses by, like, rewarding people for going there and getting people to, like, start going outside while the weather's getting nice. So if anyone wants to help out with that, just feel free to reach out to me. But hopefully that'll get started sometime this month.
All right, thank you. And student advocacy, David.
We've scheduled the town hall for May 12th, evening of May 12th. And other than that, there's not much to say.
All right, thank you. So that concludes committee updates, and it is 7:20. Does anyone want to extend the meeting for open forum at all?
I was just going to motion to adjourn, but before I do, I wanted to thank you, David, for all of your work on the GPSA and the UA.
Yeah, well, thank you all so much. I couldn't have thought of better people to work with over this past year, and I'm very honored to have the chance to serve everyone in the GPSA. And seeing no motion to extend the meeting, then we are adjourned for today. Is there a question? From Sir?
Can I raise a motion to extend meeting by 2 months?
Okay. Is there a second to the motion to extend the meeting?
Second.
Okay. Are there any objections to extending the meeting by, was it 2 minutes?
2 months.
2 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. All right. If not, we're extended and we're doing open forum. So would you like to be recognized to speak?
Please. So should I just say the question? Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. A few incoming grad students from India have reached out with a concern about Cornell's vaccination mandate for fall 21. Cornell's vaccination page states that students who have received a non-US approved vaccine will likely to be required to be vaccinated with a US approved vaccine, which is Pfizer, Moderna, J&J. The specific concern is that there's nothing known about whether this is a health hazard, because students might receive the non-approved, non-US approved vaccine, and if they're coming here, they'll be getting the US approved vaccine within a very short interval of time. So I just wanted to receive guidance on how to take this up further. That's all.
Right. So I believe I received an email about this. Are you representing the India
Association? Association.
Okay. Right. I was going to formulate an answer to that once I raised the issue further. So basically, it's we whether we have any scientific studies on double vaccination, right, for people coming back, and then second, why it seems like Cornell has a more limited policy while other universities accept WHO approved vaccines, which were includes the ones which are currently being administered in India, correct? Right. I think those are good questions that I have too. And I think that what we need is to raise the issue in such a way that we understand what New York law is actually requiring for us, if there's a specific requirement on us to only accept certain FDA-approved vaccines before people can return to campus in Ithaca. As for whether people getting double vaccinated, getting a vaccine again after they've already been administered a vaccine, I have no idea what the health effects of that are, but I hope that we can get some answer to that. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Does anyone want to chime in on this issue, especially from an international perspective?
I did also want to raise an additional issue with that, is that the ethics of it, I find very problematic. Like, sure, maybe the U.S. has enough vaccines to double vaccinate people, but there are plenty of countries that don't. And there are countries with vaccine shortages. So, like, to now double vaccinate people seems honestly kind of arrogant to me. And the second issue is, since we don't know the medical concerns of double vaccinating people yet, international students, since they've already been told that they have to get a U.S.-approved vaccine, might choose not to get vaccinated in their home country to avoid that problem, which is also a public health hazard. So I think those are issues that need to be addressed as soon as possible.
Yeah. So we agree totally with this. This perspective, and we're going to try to find more information about this and get back to you. Yeah. Okay. Are there any other points that would like to be made in regards to open forum? All right. And seeing that our time has expired, then I'm going to call this meeting now adjourned. Thank you so much for everyone's work over this year, and let's please stay in touch. And I wish best of luck to our new executive committee. We'll be starting soon. So thank you all so much. Yeah.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.